Hello and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer. With me is they say he can't be killed, and he has a big ugly ass scar on his face. It's Joel Behringer.
That's, you're a jerk. Why are you making fun of my scar? Jeez. Hey Scarface, where are you going? Man.
Scarface? Interesting you mentioned that.
I'm really sensitive about this.
Oh, well.
You're trying to pretend I'm a Vietnam character or something like that.
Yeah, something
like
that.
Because I have scars all over my face in real life. So this is, jeez.
Looking like James Edward almost.
Edward.
Is it Edward?
James.
Edward
almost.
Edward James almost. Yeah.
Close enough.
Mm-hmm.
Too many first names.
He doesn't have scars on his face. I mean, he's just got, like, acne scars. He just had bad acne as a teenager.
Oh. Anyways. Yep. Yeah, so, Joel, you're here.
Hi.
Hey. And, this is the second half of our 1986 pairing. You probably heard a week or two ago, She's Gotta Have It with, returning guest Jared Gilman. And this time we are talking about the Best Picture winner Platoon, with special guest Lan.
Hello.
Yeah. Should I have asked beforehand how I should introduce you?
Oh, well, you know, Lan's my nickname, but my first full name is Leanne. But everybody calls me Lan. Just L-A-N. Get your Lan party jokes in and out now. Heard them all before.
I mean, do they have those anymore?
I don't think so, but I still get the jokes.
Oh, okay.
LAN parties were something I wanted to do as a kid, but by the time I could afford, like, that stuff, I was like, that era's over.
Yeah.
I was born too late.
Pretty much the same here. I'm older than you. I didn't have a computer until college, and, Then never had. Then it was like a computer my friend built for me, and I traded my furniture for, because, you know, that's how college goes.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So this. So Platoon. Lan, what made you want to pick Platoon out of the options left? Which I don't think there are that many left when showed you the schedule.
Yeah, well, this was, for some reason, and I can't even tell you why, was a favorite of me and one of my best friends in high school. We just really loved this movie. We watched it a lot, and, I don't know why that, like, two 15-year-old rural Pennsylvania girls thought this was, like, their favorite movie, but it was.
Hmm.
Were you a dad or something?
I was a dad in training.
Old soul.
Yeah. I guess so. I am the one person among, like, all my friends now that is the one that is interested in watching war movies and stuff. Anytime, like, one's coming out, and like when Dunkirk came out, 1917 came out, all my friends kind of rolled their eyes going, oh, I guess when we go see the Best Picture showcase at the end of the year, we're gonna have to see that. And I was like, yay. Because I knew that no one would go see them with me, so that we'd be forced to see them at the end of the year for the Oscars.
Yeah. I'm with your friends. I'm not gonna step in line to see any quote-unquote greatest generations or generations before that doing anything, and I'm not sure I want to see any modern conflicts either. You know, 20 years in the current war is just it's enough for me.
I get it. That.
Yeah. Was that Spike Lee World War II movie? The boring one.
The boring Spike Lee. What you're talking about? The Miracle at Saint Anna.
Yeah, that episode we talked about our favorite war movies, and all of mine happened to be coming of age movies about children or whatever, like growing up in a scenario. So, like, my type of war movie is I like Platoon a lot overall, but it's not my preferred type of war movie. I like stuff like Closely Watched Trains, where it's just kind of like, this is what it's like to grow
in the
up.
Background.
Yeah, this is what's like to grow
with the
up.
The war is a backdrop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Grave of the Fireflies?
I still have the DVD, but I haven't watched it in like 3 years or 4 years.
I think you're going to... Oh, you've already seen it before. Okay, I was going to say.
We watched it in college in one of my Japanese history classes. That was a rough day.
Yeah. I was hoping you were going to say, oh, yeah, that was another one me and my high school friends just watched over. Like, why did you put this person on the podcast, Spencer? I don't know.
No, that was a one and done. That's one of those you watched it once movies and hopefully never again.
I had a DVD of that also, and I watched it one time, and I knew Sarah might actually, the person I live with, Sarah, might accidentally stumble upon it, so I gave it to my friend. And I told him, never watch this. I just can't have it in my house.
Is this like pornography for you? What's going on?
It's not. I feel like if somebody, you know, it's a Studio Ghibli animation, right?
Yeah.
So somebody might accidentally be like, hey, let's just put this on, you know, Totoro and
But it was Takahata. Yeah. He was a
Yeah, it's a Ghibli production, but not a, not a Miyazaki movie.
Yeah, but, you know, cartoons for kids.
Yeah, people don't know, a lot of people don't know the difference.
Yeah.
Well, I argue that
a lot of Ghibli. I put on that Ninja Scroll and it ruined my life.
I'd argue like Ghibli is like for everyone, like not like a kid's thing.
Sure.
Yeah, like Totoro is like the perfect film, like in general. And it's not like for kids or anything. It's just like a perfect story. And whatever.
It's good for everybody.
Yeah, like a lot of the. But anyway, this isn't about Ghibli.
No, we'll have to do a separate episode on Ghibli movies.
Ghibli. I'm not sure how to say it. Platoon. So, Joel, what was your history with Platoon? Did you see us in the theater when you were five?
Yes, I did. My father was like, this is going to make you a man. No, that didn't happen. I saw this almost exactly 10 years ago today when I was still taking film classes in junior college or community college, whatever it's called. I remember very much disliking it at the time. I think I had seen Apocalypse Now, and I was comparing it with that, and you know, where Apocalypse Now is poetic and meandering and dreamlike, Platoon is pretty like you're in there experiencing things, you know, and it has this kind of. It, because of the amount of celebrity in it, it has this almost comical edge to it that I feel like still takes away from the violence of what's being portrayed. But I did like it better this time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have a similar story to Lance. I saw it in high school, and I loved it. And if you asked me between, like, 16 and 19 what my favorite movies are, I would have said Platoon was in there. And I haven't seen it. And
Platoon, Boondock Saints.
It's better than Boondock Saints. Come on. But
I mean, now, of course.
yeah, now. But this is the first time I watched it since high school. And I don't love it like I did back then, but I still really appreciate it. And it's really... like it's a really affecting movie, but I kind of have mixed feelings on... some of the stuff that we'll probably get in on it, and some stuff in it, but we'll get into that. So they're like, this was the Best Picture winner, and it was like the critical darling of 1986. Like, basically, like all the major critics loved it except for Pauline Kael, which was kind of her shtick. But Pauline Kael was also like a good writer, could explain her opinions on things. And so, like, and it's the first Vietnam movie made by someone who's actually there, which, seeing it now, as an adult, it's like, it does stick out compared to, like, Full Metal Jacket and Apocalypse Now, where those just feel like this is someone who saw Vietnam on TV, or had a friend who was in it, but you can tell, like, it, those are movies, and this is... closer to like, no, this is like an experience of what it was like, because like Stone did because basically the Charlie Sheen character is an analog for Oliver Stone, where like he dropped out from Yale and he was 20, and Charlie Sheen's character is supposed to be 20, and like all the years line up, and like Stone came from like a upper middle class family, and so like it's kind of like his semi autobiographical experience of what it was actually like over there.
The Wikipedia article starts off by saying that the movie is a counter to the John Wayne movie, The Green Berets, and I really want to see that piece of shit now. What does that movie say about Vietnam?
It's a propaganda piece where it's like Vietnam is a good thing because John Wayne was a you know, a hardline conservative.
Yeah, I don't trust anything John Wayne was in.
He made good movies. Save our these people from the commies.
He made good movies. So his opinions as a person were shitty.
That's true. Sure,
good actor on a lot of cases. Yeah.
Yeah, just don't.
It's like
read
James
it.
Wood, terrible person, good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you guys have family that served in Vietnam at all?
I actually don't. No.
Not to my knowledge.
Just my grandfathers were in World War II, but no, nobody in Vietnam.
Oh, I think I have just one, at least one I know of, and he served maybe like a year or one tour, but that was kind of it. And as far as I know, like he's kind of similar to the Keith David character a little bit, like a very loud person in general. And kind of like lively and whatever, but like he kind of doesn't talk about it, and so I've barely met him in my life, but like you know, I suspect it was probably terrible, but yeah, that's kind of like the only really direct like family connection I really have to Vietnam.
Yeah, surprisingly, I don't.
Yeah, I'm lucky that way, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like my parents would have to be slightly older than they are. They're in their 60s, approaching 70s now. So I don't know. It didn't touch them for some reason.
Same here. Yeah, I don't know.
My dad's uncles got lucky and weren't drafted. Because my dad kind of he's born a couple years. He was born in 1958, so he kind of lucked out with like getting drafted, because by the time he would have been old enough, it was basically over.
Yeah, it would have been over. Yeah.
And his uncle,
according to Wikipedia, the U.S. pulled out officially in 73, but or whatever. Major actions stopped in 73, which means it was all political after that point.
Yeah. All right, so there's not really a plot to this. It's just kind of like episodic vignettes of Chris Taylor's tour in Vietnam from, I think it was September 67 to I think January 68 is when it's supposed to end.
Yeah, Apocalypse Now is the same way, and so is Full Metal Jacket. Like, it's just kind of like moments of what happened, because it's not like I imagine the Green Beret one is like, now we've won the war, you know, like there is a beginning and an end to it, but that's not the way it actually happened. So
it's just things going from bad to worse.
Yeah, I guess Apocalypse Now has him finding Colonel. Colonel Klink is what I was going to call him. Marlon Brando.
Colonel Kurtz.
That's kind of like the end of it. Yeah, Kurtz, there we go. Full Metal Jacket definitely is just like, well, I guess the war goes on, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one too. But he's on a helicopter leaving, I guess, is that how this ends? I didn't actually see the ending this time.
Yeah, he gets on a helicopter and leaves. So
he gets on a bus. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he gets on a bus.
Oh, cool.
Out on a chopper.
Oh, yeah.
Crying on a chopper, actually, on the way out. That's how it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as always, I want to start with negatives. So, like, what are things about this movie you guys don't really like, or things that kind of annoyed you about it?
Directly negative things.
I think there are a few parts that, I don't know, maybe I don't remember it feeling like this back when I watched this as a teenager, that, I don't know, just seem a little cheesy. I don't know if, I watched it on Amazon, and it's like, you know, I think it's a HD restoration of it. So, like, it looked, there were parts of it, like, especially in the middle, like, where things would get bright, and it made it really look cheesy. Like, it like, really looked soundstagey. And I don't remember that being a problem, but I probably, when I was in high school, I was watching it on VHS, and that probably actually lended to it better than being a, you know, 4K restoration on Amazon.
Right.
Yeah.
I think my major problem, besides the famous actor thing I said earlier, is that a couple of the characters feel like caricatures, and it's probably because they're like amalgamations of like people that Oliver Stone actually knew, but like Willem Dafoe's character, right? He's practically an angel compared to everybody else. Like,
yeah.
And when he's crucified by a Vietnam fire. It feels a little too wholesome, a little too loving about this person. And then Charlie Sheen's character as the clueless person who volunteered for this mess sometimes comes off as a little like, well, okay, I think I know where his character arc's going. And like I said, it's probably based on reality and multiple people's realities. So I don't feel like it's necessarily a fair criticism if it's based on somebody's real life.
Yeah. Some of it, my main thing that really kind of got under skin is it plays with being like a big prestige Hollywood picture, and then it gets real like, then it'll have like a really gritty, ugly battle scene. And it's like, the two tones just don't work as well together. Cause like with, Dafoe and, Behringer, cause like, as like the two basically like father figures of like, you can be, a complete animal and just abuse your way to survival, or you can try to figure out a way to find a balance between like being peaceful and using force when necessary. But it feels just very like a little too heavy-handed of like, Dafoe is super perfect and super, and he's basically Jesus, which is ironic because he played Jesus a couple years later in that Scorsese movie. And then with in Behringer, like, he's like the ultimate evil, and it's like this really telegraphed, like, from the first moment you see him, it's like, oh, this guy is pure evil.
Scars on his face, yeah. You know, he's talking about toughening up these people and stuff like that, yeah. And who survives? Evil. AKA the North Vietnamese. No, I don't know.
And, like, the voiceover, too, some of it was, like, I can't tell if the voiceover is supposed to, like, take place during that time, or if it's supposed to be, like, afterward when he's back home.
I think it's during, because there is one point later in the movie where Charlie Sheen is just, like, sitting there smoking and glaring off into the middle distance, and Keith David comes up to him and is like, you're not even writing a letter, don't you? You're always writing letters to your family or a girl or somebody, and he's just like, no, I'm done with that.
Yeah, his girl was grandma. He kept writing.
And I guess, but like some of the language of like the narration felt like a Civil War reenactment, like in Ken Burns thing. But like his dialogue outside of that is just kind of like very basic, and so the two tones don't match up. But he
right.
But they do establish he, you know, is a college, he's a college boy, so I guess maybe that's the excuse, but at the same time, it's kind of like the one, like, it's this very flowery, like, poetic language, and another one is this kind of like, you know, you're in hell, and you don't have time to be, like, eloquent with what you say.
Sure, and like, when you're writing a letter home, you wouldn't be like, I saw three people shot in the head, and then one of my fellow troopers raped a woman, and anyways, tell Mom I said hi.
Exactly.
And that's right, I wrote badass motherfucker on the side of my helmet. How's the farm? yeah, it does, I mean, I wonder how much of an influence Apocalypse Now was on that for the, because that's, you know, it's got voiceover throughout.
Yeah.
Of crazy Martin Sheen's thoughts and things like that.
But that's also Heart of Darkness, but transplanted to Vietnam.
Mm.
Heart of Darkness, yeah, that's the name of the book. Where Heart of Darkness is set in, like, colonial Africa, I think? I forgot where exactly. And,
oh,
like,
right. I think, yeah.
Something like that. And, like, Coppola just was like, what if I took that story and made turned to Vietnam? And yeah, I haven't seen Apocalypse Now in years, so I don't know if I'll still like
same.
It as much as I used to.
Yeah, I should revisit that one.
Yeah, I saw it about 2 years ago for Dave Stone Rob's podcast, The Realist, and I still like it a lot. Not, I used to like it a lot, but I still think it's very well made.
Yeah. And interesting to point out, Charlie Sheen's dad was the star of Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Martin Sheen and Charlie Sheen both starred in Vietnam movies.
Whoa.
Did Emilio ever do a Vietnam movie?
Yes, The Breakfast Club.
Men at Work?
No, I don't believe Men at Work takes place during Vietnam.
Aren't there garbage men or something in that movie?
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm familiar with is...
Yeah, you know what? I've never actually seen that movie.
Yeah, me neither.
No, it used to go...
Free Jack, isn't that, you know?
Mick Jagger, that counts.
Oh, yeah.
But the... What else was there? The casting, like you were saying, the casting is kind of distracting, which...
I forgot about everybody who was in this movie. It had been a long time since I'd seen it, but
it's crazy.
Yeah.
And like being like a horror fan and like genre movie fan, seeing like Keith David and Tony Todd in the same movie together is like
the same movie. Yeah. Like, this is great. Let's make a movie about them. Oh no, never mind. They're just
And young Forrest Whitaker when he's still actually trying all the time. Although lately, I feel like he kind of stopped trying a few years ago.
Everyone's a baby.
Johnny
in
Depp
this.
Just 2 years after Nightmare on Elm Street. I think that was 84, right?
Yes, 84.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And Johnny Depp, I always forget is in the movie. It's always when the credits happen and you see the people, it's like, how's Johnny Depp? Like, he really blends in. Into a role, which I miss that giant up when he actually would try.
Act?
Act. And, you know, he didn't rely on, like, wearing eyeliner and crazy hats. Like, actually was like, oh, I can, like, do, like, weird, not weird quirk stuff, but, like, you know, care about what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Johnny Depp does great in those roles. I'm just tired of the character and the movies and...
It's the same character every time.
Well, you know, you get paid millions of dollars. We'll see if you try to keep your, what's that called? Integrity, yeah.
I mean, yeah. All he does
I
is drink.
A long time ago, so.
Yeah, but it's either like he's Jack Sparrow or he's Hunter S. Thompson. And that's kind of like the two modes.
Mm. What if he did a Hunter S. Thompson movie with where he was with the Hell's Angels? because you know he wrote a couple
about that. That the Great Shark Hunt, or that the something else?
What's that?
The Great Shark Hunt. That's one of Hunter S. Thompson books. I can't remember what it's about though.
I don't think that's the one with the Hell's Angels. But I don't remember. Anyway, that's not the movie. In this one, he doesn't really make a mark until he's like the translator in that one village.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's just baby-faced Johnny Depp.
Everybody's baby-faced in this. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Forrest Whitaker looks the same. He's kind of looked the same.
No.
No?
His head has gotten much larger. Okay.
All right.
Otherwise, yes. The one actor that I definitely would not have recognized back then is the guy who, I think the character's name is Ducky on Mad Men. Like, I didn't know who that actor was, but I was like, oh, and he's like the pastor or whatever.
Oh, you're asking the wrong person.
On Mad
I've not watched Mad Men.
I only watched a season and a half of it, and I barely remember any of it.
I think he comes in season two. I'm not exactly sure, but he's a character that like I didn't know. At least I didn't think I knew before. And then I was like, oh, there he is.
We got Dr. Cox too.
Oh yeah,
that's great.
Is he immortal?
I think so.
He looked practically the same in Scrubs. Maybe a little more, you know, tan, wrinkly around the edges, but
yeah. And I feel like he's channeling some of this, and the great Ice-T movie, Surviving the Game, a little bit, where he's playing a Texan cannibal. But that Texas accent in that movie, it depends on the scene if he's actually doing it, if you pay attention.
Yeah.
And like the biggest distraction, like biggest like, is Johnny Drama from Entourage. It is like. See, like I always forget, like, oh yeah, he's in other stuff that's not Entourage, and it's weird seeing him so young, and like he just looks like so like shorter and scrawnier than everyone else, and it's like
I didn't know who Kevin Dillon was. I probably thought that was Matt Dillon back in the day.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, they're brothers. They look alike.
Yeah. They do. Kevin Dillon looks a little more Weasley than Matt Dillon.
That is true. Yeah.
I don't know.
Matt Dillon is more imposing.
I feel like Matt Dillon. Well, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Matt Dillon is more likely to stab me when I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, like
maybe
in the house
that's
that,
what you mean.
Yeah, house that Jack built. Yeah, he'd do that and make a really mean spirited joke about it.
Yeah. Or There's Something About Mary, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's kind of the main ones. Besides, like, yeah, I mean, the cast is good, but it's just distracting at certain points of, like, it's like Keith David and, like, Tony Todd, just, like, for me, like, oh, those are just, like, you know, genre movie icon, and it's, like, it's like, I can't take them that seriously. Not taking that seriously, but it does those two really take me out of it? Because with Keith David, it's like all I'm thinking of is like putting on glasses or like wrestling scene or like Candyman the whole time.
Speaking of Something About Mary, how'd you get the beans above the Frank?
Oh yeah,
you'll forget he was in that.
All right, but all right. Some of the stuff I really... Because this movie been talked to death, so... I don't think we'll add anything new to this. Which is fine. Oh.
What do you think... I mean, so did you look up, like, reviews from other people, like, recently or back in the day? Because I'm really curious as to what the modern temperature on this is.
I checked Letterboxd of people, like, that I follow on there. And a lot of people overall really like it. Like, between, like, 3.5 and 4.5 stars, usually, of, like, modern stuff. People watch it now.
Lan, you used to watch it a lot when you're younger. Like, how do you feel in general about it now?
It was good to see. Yeah, it was good to see it again. Yeah, now that I'm so very much older. Because I hadn't seen it probably since college. Like, we watched it a bunch, and then as I get older, I re-watch movies less. It's like, I don't know if I'm just like, there's so many movies and not enough time. Gotta watch something new.
Yep.
I don't know if I liked it as much as I did back then, but I still enjoyed it. I would say, like, if I liked it 9 out of 10 in high school, I would say, like, a 7 out of 10 now.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like, high school me would have been like, you know, perfect 10, but now I'm like 7.5, 8 maybe.
I wonder how I would have felt about it in high school, because I didn't watch violent movies or anything. Like, I hardly ever watched rated R movies unless it was just R for cursing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no horror movies, hardly any war movies. Like, I think the first real war movie I saw was, for some crazy reason, I saw The Thin Red Line in the theater. And that, speaking about dream escapes and stuff like that, that was a movie that left me completely perplexed. Like, I was I'd seen Saving Private Ryan before that too. That's what I was expecting. Like, wait a minute.
Is that why you don't like
shot?
That why you don't like Terrence? What's his name?
Malick.
Malick that much?
I like Days of Heaven. But I think I've only seen that, the Thin Red Line, and one other movie, To the Wonder, and neither of those worked for me when I watched them. But as you get older, your tastes change and stuff like that. I wonder if they would work better for me now.
Maybe. Yeah, but I'm gonna go with this. With the stuff that I really like in this movie, I like that the battle sequences are not fun to watch. Like, because even like Apocalypse Now and FOMO Jacket, like the battle sequences in that are graphic and violent, but they still are kind of like fun violence. And in this one, it's like Stone does a good job of making sure, like, it's uncomfortable and confusing and unpleasant. Yeah. And, like, it's hard to follow, but not in, like, a Christopher Nolan action sequence type of way. Like, it's hard to follow, like, because you're fighting in a dark jungle at night and, you know, an enemy knows the land and you don't. So it's, like, genuinely terrifying in some moments. And, yeah.
Yeah. I agree completely with that. It's it's that chaos. It's got it perfect.
Mm-hmm. When I think of like fighting scenes, like in Apocalypse Now, I'm not really recalling anything where it seemed like the Americans were in danger, and so I'm like, the only thing I can really hold on to is Forrest Gump, where it was like, oh, it was a conflict, and then we moved on, you know, and then, oh, everything went to crap, and that's when Vietnam ended for me. You know, like, okay, thank great. You know, it's like, yeah, people making jokes in the middle of the firefight. Like, yeah, this feels way more authentic and a little bit anxiety-inducing. It's because you don't... They really do just start picking off people at random intervals after the village scene. It's like you don't know who's going to go.
Yeah, it's like apparently during a shoot, it was shot sequentially, and Stone was apparently a monster to deal with, but apparently he actively tried to be like a big asshole to everyone, but
wasn't everyone in this shoot, like, they really put him through like military training.
Oh yeah, he got the military advisor, Dale Dye, who's like the military advisor on a lot of Hollywood movies. Like, he put them through like a legit boot camp for 2 weeks, where he
That's what I thought.
There's a really good interview with him on a another podcast behind a paywall. I Was There Too podcast.
What Devil
Where
Die?
He talks about his experience working on that stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. That is a good show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he talks. I guess there was a part where Oliver Stone left right after a take, and no one could find him, and he found him, and they talked about basically PTSD together, and got him back. He got Oliver Stone to come back to the production and stuff like that.
And Adele was on Unspooled, and Amy had a good interview with him, and he and Dale said
is that what I'm thinking about?
No, that's a different. he told different stories on that one, and apparently he wanted to. He treated the actors like soldiers, and he didn't lighten up. And he wished he could have gone further, but Stone and producers kind of were don't go too harsh on them, but be harsh on them. And
I don't want them to quit.
he would let them get lost during when he was training them. And so, he could track them, but they were completely lost. And so he just let them figure it out on their own. And he gave them, he told the story with Johnny Depp and Charlie Sheen, where he sent them off to, patrol an area. And he gave them two M16s with, 200 rounds or something. And so Dale... And found a bunch of goats in the area, and so he kind of herded the goats and led the goats and got them to charge where Johnny Depp and Charlie Sheen were, and they freaked out and fired wildly, and they used up all their ammo in a couple minutes as goats were running by them, just to test them.
Oh my god!
If they hurt a goat, I'm going to be very upset. I was very upset when the pig got killed off screen. And then there's a part where the guy kicks a pig with his boot. I was like, I hate you, Kevin Dillon.
Yeah. That's when they become the real villains, when they hurt the animals.
Yeah, exactly. You can kill as many of those people as you want, but my animals.
Yeah. Well, you're going to say something?
No, I'm done crying about pigs for now.
Now, there's a lot of animals foreshadowing stuff in this, which is a nice little omen, because when they're investigating the bunker in the beginning, and Charlie Sheen is walking around, and a python slithers over his boots, and then you get the cut to I wrote it down. I can't remember if it was Defoe shoots the guy in the bunker or the mine goes off. But, get the snake... Okay, it was... the snake crawls by him, cut to the tunnel where Defoe shoots the guy, cut to the mine trap going off. And then there was, at the end, where he sees, a deer, where everything's nice and calm. And then, he saved.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's a couple other... There's, one big other thing with an animal, foreshadowing.
You read, the red ants swarming all over his body, as the people living in the jungle waiting for them. You don't even know your enemy is around. You just know that you're in pain.
Yeah.
I wonder if those welts on his face were real.
Apparently they were. All the stuff
I would believe it.
with bug bites and stuff, that was real.
Yeah, that looks... Oh, God. I was, feeling, residual pain just from seeing it.
Yeah. All right. This is going back to the distracting part with Tom Berenger. All I could think of at first was the We Hate Movies thing with from the Substitute episode, oh my god, I'm a killer with Tom
Berenger. That's what he was thinking after they found that guy strung up. It's oh my god, I'm gonna kill him. Yeah, if he took out a yo-yo and started beating people. See, that's the kind of movie that they, you know, the Cannon Group would make. Like, he's gone to Vietnam to take shit back or stuff. I don't know.
I'm sure Cannon made like five...
Fight the War Alone.
Yeah, made like five Platoon ripoffs.
Sure, yeah.
At least five.
Chuck Norris.
Yeah, Chuck Norris or like... fuck, the martial arts guy. Dudikoff. Michael Dudikoff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Bronson.
What about that guy?
I saw Price the Working. I'm sure Bronson said no to anything leaving America.
I have to go outside? No.
Yeah. Although I'm sure Bronson would have been closer to John Wayne. To the war compared to other people.
I don't know what his political views were, but yeah, he was probably a conservative.
Oh, he was. The Death Wish movies were his fantasy.
I heard that, like, after the second one, mm-hmm. he started having a real problem with, like, the level of violence and, like, the message he was portraying. I mean, he still did three more after that, but...
Yeah, because they paid him...
He didn't mind enough to not collect the paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like Johnny Depp, you know?
Yeah, but apparently...
He's not actually a pirate.
Yeah, but apparently Bronson, when he is first told about Death Wish, he's like, I want to do that. And he's like, be in a movie? And he said, no, I want to shoot muggers. It's like, oh.
No, I want to shoot brown people.
Yeah, that's what he really means.
But Bronson, you look rather brown. Shut up.
All right. So, Lane, what was stuff in this that you liked that stuck out this time?
I think Tom Berenger is really good. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably the best one. Even though when I was a teenager, Willem Dafoe was my favorite character, you know, in it. We were just all really crazy about Willem Dafoe, my friends and I. We'd, like, watch everything he was in.
Oh, yeah.
I think everyone is pretty good in this, but I think he's my favorite.
Hmm. Is it the scar that does it for you?
He's really scary. He does a good job of being very scary.
Is it my scar? No, it's your car. No one gets that reference.
No.
Yeah, I agree with that. He definitely, like, he's... I wonder if he had war experience or anything else like that, but, like, he's just an intimidating figure. Like, I think he could definitely beat up Matt Dillon if he wanted to, if they got in, you know, like, a knife fight. You mean
Kevin Dillon or Matt Dillon?
No, we were talking about Matt Dillon being the intimidating one.
Okay, I was just checking. I was checking with you.
I mean, Kevin Dillon, yeah, he just looked at him the wrong way and his head exploded. It was a, you know.
Yeah.
True story.
The other big thing that really stuck out was the sound design. Because the sound design is, like, on par with, like, Texas Chainsaw. And, like, David Lynch was, like, how perfect everything is. Because, like, it's never quiet. There's always, like, bug sounds or animal sounds or people yelling or gunfire. And, like, it's just always unsettling.
It's, like, always walkie-talkies and radios and stuff always going off.
Yeah, they're always warning these guys to be quiet when we're going through the bush. But, my God, it's like they're walking through the mall. Like, you know, hey, you're doing this, Peckerwood, and like, and like, oh, yeah, yeah, don't worry. Like, oh, I hurt my foot. You know, of course they're going to get caught. I remembered this having way more music, like, not necessarily Forrest Gump level, but I remember hearing things, and since I didn't get to finish, I only got the one Motown song and mm-hmm. whatever Kevin Dillon was listening to that said, we don't smoke marijuana, which is like, that's nothing to brag about.
You mean that really obvious cut of them smoking weed cut to them smoking weed, then you get cut to like the country song with the line, we don't smoke marijuana. I heard
the Miser putting stuff
Merle Haggard song to White Rabbit. Mm-hmm. There was like White Rabbit to Merle Haggard song of some variety.
Somebody was playing White Rabbit. I'm glad I missed that part.
That one there smoking weed is kind
of... Yeah, okay. Of course.
It's pretty quiet in the background.
I guess I did, Matt. The movie allowed me not to notice it, because that is personally one of my least liked songs in movies now, because it's always like...
It's a little on the nose.
I took too much aspirin. One pill makes you smaller. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
It's pretty quiet in the background of the scene that it's in.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I was too busy looking into Willem Dafoe's dreamy eyes when he's addressing the camera.
Oh, you mean that homoerotic sequence where he's like, put your mouth on it.
Put your mouth on this. And I was like, yes, sir.
And it's like when he goes into like the weed hut, like you see his Willem Dafoe shirtless, like smiling like seductively at him. It's like, are they gonna fuck?
He does that little hand wave where you don't actually move your wrist. You're just gonna,
yeah,
like you're grasping.
Yeah, like I forgot.
Anyways, I was seduced.
I mean, I was too.
How couldn't you be? It's Willem Dafoe.
I was just thinking, you put him in some like shiny slicker overalls and slick his hair back. Yeah, we're right back in those streets of fire.
Yeah, like if he asked me if I liked the lobster, I'd say yes. I did like the lobster.
So why'd I spill my beans? Because you told me to, sir.
If I had steak, I would fuck it. Is that the line?
I don't remember.
It's something like that.
I'll have to watch it again.
Lighthouse. It's a good movie.
It is.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, watch it. But, yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to bring up that, like, really stuck out? Because, like, I don't know. It's, like, as I said before, it's been talked to death. But, you know, anything that really you guys want to bring up?
Yeah, we're just going to talk about the music, and then we went over that. Because you feel like you can't have a movie set in the 60s without White Rabbit playing somewhere in it.
Sure. Anything else stand out about that?
Oh, okay.
I have to say, that song has never made me feel like I was on a drug trip just because they played it. It's,
Yeah, I like the song not in movies. In movies, it's like, pick a new song already.
Right.
But
drug use ended in the 60s. Everyone knows that.
It made me wonder. It was one of the things that made me wonder is like, is it cliche now because this is one of the movies that used it, or was it already cliche at that point? I thought that too in the beginning when one of the guys shows his picture of his girl to Charlie Sheen's character and is like, "There's my girl back home." Yep. You know, and then of course we know what's going to happen to him. And I was thinking that. I was like, is it cliche at that point, or do we think it's cliche now because this is one of the movies that did it?
I feel like the picture thing was kind of cliche. Like, they probably did that during, you know, World War II pics and stuff like
that. Yeah, I figured it had to be, right? Yeah.
Always make it a bit more tragic if that guy's got somebody waiting. The fact that that guy gets killed, like, right away.
Yeah, then immediately.
It's kind of like, oh, okay, well. It's like that fat guy who went to Shawshank and dies in the first night. Like, he didn't give this guy a chance. But I bet the song hadn't been used very heavily before Platoon for representing people having a good time and not bothering other assholes in the other area. Do I sound judgmental?
A little bit, but it's fine. No, sorry. I'm trying to think of, like, if there are other, like, Vietnam or 60s set movies that, like, abused that song by this point. And I do think this might be, like, the nexus of it.
Yeah.
Like, this has to be.
Because everybody saw this movie. I mean, it was, like you said, Best Picture winner, and...
Yeah,
it was like, huge.
You know, and...
Probably made John Wayne turn over in his grave if he was dead. I'm not sure if he was.
He was dead already.
Oh, you mean now? Okay.
Yeah.
You mean by 86 he was dead?
Yeah, by 86. He died in 80.
Oh, okay.
Because of that, The Conqueror movie. Allegedly, I should say allegedly, that killed like 80% of the people who worked on it.
Oh, right. God, yeah.
Yeah, but there were two hip-hop references. Well, two hip-hop things, related things I noticed. One was One of the Last Lines, where... not Junior. Francis. I think it's Francis. Says, like, we don't get high, high, yes, sir. Which is sampled in a lot of hip-hop songs. Which coming in that moment was, like, I had, like, a flash flood of, like, 20 songs going off in my head. Like, I've heard that, like, 100 times by now. And like
Charlie Sheen was very influential on the hip-hop scene.
no, he wasn't.
Well, I mean, he got this movie, and then Regulators Roll Up is from Young Guns.
Oh, didn't know that. But Charlie Sheen didn't say that line. It was the other person. And the other was, which I think might be a reference to the movie, is a La Cosa Nostra song called That's Coke, where I think it's Everlast or Ill Bill, like, has a line back at the scene of a crime, which I feel like, because, like, Platoon is the type of movie that like, a lot of hardcore hip-hop people would reference incorrectly as, like, that's a badass movie and not really pay attention to the message. Like what Scarface used to be for hip-hop, but that's been replaced by Narcos, the Netflix show, in the last few years.
You think people are referencing Narcos in, like, their music?
Oh, they are. It's like the new Scarface thing of, like, people like, oh yeah, Narcos, that's a badass dude. He was a good businessman. It's like, yeah, but he died because he was dealing drugs.
I haven't watched any of the show. Is there? There's a character named Jimmy Narcos or something.
It's based off a real, dude.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's like the Scarface thing. Like, watch, like, learn about the person before you, like, idolize them.
Was Scarface based on it, like, an actual Cuban immigrant?
Narcos is about Pablo Escobar, isn't it? I've not watched it, but I thought that's what it's about, right?
I believe it's him. But okay, so yeah, this one Best Picture, and
moving on.
Yeah, moving on.
This isn't about Narcos, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but well, yeah, I guess we kind of said our piece about it. Like, I would recommend it. It's good. It's not great.
Yes.
One thing I wanted to point out that I definitely didn't notice when I saw it originally that I was very happy to hear was the whole the black cast members talking about how, like, the rich are always shitting on the poor, basically, like, using them and things like that. Like, I really it didn't stick with me because technically the movie's not about that, but the message is, like, clear as day right there. Like, we're aware of what's going on, and it's been going on for a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely stuck out more to me this time, too.
And the weird contrast to that is when they find the soldier who was killed by the VC near the village is a black soldier.
Yeah.
So it's like, they can, so it's like this, so, like, part of me is thinking, like, is he trying to say something about race? Because, like, on one hand, if the black soldiers point out inequality, but then they kill a black soldier, and then, like, Tom Berenger, who is a noted racist in the movie, is, like, enraged that they killed, like, killed one of them, but it was a black soldier, so it's, I don't know, maybe it's just,
and that,
like,
that was doubling up on, like, he just lost two other soldiers in that explosion, and this was the straw that broke the camel's back for him.
Okay. I mean, because Stone is a smart guy. Like, I feel like he would think these things through. And I don't think he's really, I haven't seen that many of his movies, but I don't think he really brings up race that much. If at all.
I realized in watching this that I've only ever seen one other Oliver Stone movie, and that was Natural Born Killers, and I haven't seen that since high school either, so I can't really speak on it.
I'm in the same place.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I, like, looked down the list and was like, oh, I haven't seen any of these.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Oliver Stone's work, honestly. Like, I actually like this more than I thought I would, but The Doors is, I hate that movie. And there's a lot that I should like about The Doors, and I can't take it. Like, get Kyle MacLachlan out of this movie, put him with some other actor. He doesn't. He should be in something else. But Wall Street is okay. And the only other one I'd seen was Any Given Sunday, which is also okay.
Hmm. I've seen parts of
Alexander
that one.
Is like crazy.
Oh, I have a weird story with Alexander. When I went to Catholic school for high school, I went to Catholic high school for 1 year. I won't get into that. This will turn to like a WTF episode if I get into that stuff. But sure. My friend took Latin, and the teacher, Father Muckluck, his name was Muckluck, by the way. It's a funny name. But, he showed them Alexander. I'm pretty sure it's Alexander because there's a graphic sex scene in it with what's her name?
That's why he showed it to them? Wow.
No, because there's Latin in the movie or something. But like during this, during the graphic sex scene, he like turned the volume down and like fast forward and like turned the TV or whatever around, and he told the students, "Oh, they're gonna play chess in the bedroom."
Oh wow.
just imagine they're screaming Vinny Vidi Vici. I had a moment like that in a science class where we were watching a video about some jungle in Africa, and we were watching a gorilla just like they're mm-hmm. eating food while somebody was talking, and another gorilla just came up behind that gorilla and just started going at it. And the teacher had to fast forward real quick. Just ignore that part.
Yeah. And Father Muck,
if it makes you feel better, you said you only got to go to Catholic school for 1 year. I was in Catholic school for 8 years.
No. I went to Catholic school for 11 years.
No wonder
years.
You love Platoon.
No, I was in Catholic school for 11 years. My last year was that 1 year in the Catholic high school.
I see. Okay.
Yeah,
I was hoping one of you had seen Born on the 4th of July, or the other one he did, because Heaven and Earth.
Yeah, he did a trilogy of Vietnam.
No,
movies.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I have not seen those.
I don't know if I could take Born on the 4th of July, because it's Tom Cruise.
Amy on Unspooled was saying, like, she thinks Born on the 4th of July is, like, the better version of Platoon. It's because it deals with like the themes better and has Tom Cruise and she wrote a book on Tom Cruise, so of course she's going to be a little biased towards that.
He's a great actor, but it's just like we're just talking about the star power in this movie. I just feel like I'll be like, but that's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, apparently it's one of the few times he actually wasn't like trying to be the superstar or whatever.
He's always an actor that like I end up liking, and I hate myself for liking him. Whatever it is I'm watching.
No.
I don't want to like Tom Cruise, but I do. He's good. Damn it.
He's very charismatic. Like I was anti Tom Cruise for a long time, but every time I'd watch one of his movies, I'd be like, "Oh, he's actually really good at what he does." Like there's a reason.
Yeah.
But I remember I used to listen to the Nerdist podcast. We won't get into the stuff behind that show.
That's fine.
One person, but Tom Cruise in an episode, and he gave the most generic answers to like questions. He'd be like, "I like all movies," but when he says it's like, "Yeah, I like all movies too, Tom Cruise." Like he's like so energetic and so charismatic. Like even when he gives like the bullshit, like non-answer, it's like, oh, like he knows what he's doing. He's a professional.
You buy it, yeah.
Sure, yeah. Doesn't want to call anybody out. Like, oh, this wasn't good. Well, Tom Cruise said it wasn't good.
Yeah, but this was the other. As always, I'm going to go through the other Best Picture nominees, see if you two had seen them. Okay. I'll say is I've never seen any of the other movies that were nominated. The Mission, Children of a Lesser God.
Nope.
Nope.
Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yes.
Nope.
Room with a View.
Yes.
Nope.
No.
I've seen A Room with a View about 10 times. It's one of Sarah's favorite movies.
Ah, okay.
And I would watch it over Platoon any day. That's just my personal preference. I don't think necessarily... No, I think, in my opinion, A Room with a View is a better movie, but that's... It's, you know, that's apples and oranges. You get to see a lot of male penis in... and it's not a lot of male penis. You do get to see male penis in A Room with a View, though.
Okay. Well, that's something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, Hannah and her sisters always seem like a boring movie.
It's but funny. It's entertaining and funny. I just wish it wasn't that Scumbag's movie.
Yeah, I've only seen a few of his movies, and that's not one of them.
I've only seen Manhattan, and I was like, this isn't for me.
when I was a kid, one of my dad's... When I was a kid, one of my dad's favorite movies was Sleeper, so I've seen that... but probably not since I was a kid. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, like, I feel like I probably should watch, like, some of the, like, Annie Hall and the other good ones just to see if I like his other stuff, but it isn't even, like, about him personally. Just, like, Manhattan just did nothing for me at the time.
I mean, that one's, like, a little funny, but, like, Annie Hall is actually funny. Hannah and her sisters is actually funny. You know, you probably would like the ones that are a little bit funnier than the drier drama things.
Yeah. I've never heard, like, his stand-up or, like, him on talk shows, but apparently it can be funny, but I don't know.
That's why people liked him.
People still like him. Like, Jeff Goldblum is still an avid defender. Yeah. And Spike Lee.
What a disappointment.
I mean, Jeff Goldblum's kind of a creep. Like, it's not alleged at this point. Like, it's been out there.
Documented for evidence of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike Lee famously, I think a few months ago, finally said, like, he doesn't support or defend Woody Allen anymore.
Yeah, he did.
Because for a while he was like, no, leave him alone. But now he's come around, which I guess I don't. Spike talks a lot, like, loves to make big statements and make a big show of everything. So who knows? Maybe he's looking for attention. Like, I can't tell with him half the time.
I think it was a situation where he's actually friends with him, and it just took. You know, it's harder to accept things when you feel like you know somebody. Or just, you know, it's blatant and you ignore it like everyone did with him.
Yeah, but I'm sure, like, Spike's dad might be friends with him, because Spike's dad is, like, a jazz musician also. So I'm sure they probably ran in the same circles. Although Spike and his dad are talking again. I just know, like, as of the 90s, like, they didn't like each other. But, oh, whatever. That's, alright, so, Platoon is out there. It's on DVD. It's streaming places. You know, it's easily available.
I rented it on Amazon to watch it, so it's available there.
Yep, you could get a $3 Blu-ray at Big Lots. That's where I got mine.
Of the Best Picture winners we've done so far, recently, I should say, like, I would watch this again. Like, Braveheart is fine, but kind of...
No.
No? You would watch Braveheart over this? Oh, it's just, okay.
No, I'd watch Platoon over Braveheart.
Okay.
But I'm not in a hurry to watch either of them.
And, like, what was that?
Braveheart has that gore.
Yeah, but it has Mel Gibson, though, and that's, that makes it even worse, because he is an independent racist, in my opinion.
Yeah. And in his opinion.
Yes.
Yeah. And what was the other, like...
I think I'd rather watch a Platoon over Braveheart myself. Braveheart's fine. Yeah. Other than, you know, it being Mel Gibson. But I think I like Platoon better.
Yeah, it's paced better. Braveheart, I didn't realize was 3 hours when we did it. It's like, oh, this 3 hours of Mel Gibson.
That is true. God.
I'd rather watch both of those over Chicago, though. That's just what? Me.
Chicago's so much fun.
I'm sorry.
It's
sorry,
one of my favorite musicals. I love
sorry.
It.
I just don't like the movie version. It was boring to me.
I did like it better when I saw it on stage. It's one of the few Broadway shows that I've actually gotten to see. But I mean, I did enjoy the movie too.
Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of new to liking musicals, and Chicago was like, this is a whole lot of fun. It's not my favorite musical by any stretch, but it's really good. I don't get you, Joel.
Not enough Queen Latifah.
Everything could use more Queen Latifah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, would you prefer Platoon over Shakespeare in Love?
Yes.
Yes.
And I've not even seen Shakespeare in Love.
That's another one that's just fine.
I guess I would watch Platoon, then Shakespeare in Love, then Braveheart, and then Chicago.
Hmm. All right. And then the two Clint Eastwood movies, which...
Million Dollar Baby, Unforgiven. Yeah.
Unforgiven, I'd rather...
I'm not actually seen either of those.
I think Unforgiven's probably my favorite out of the bunch.
It's up there for me, too. Million Dollar Baby... I think it's past its time. There's no reason to really.
I think
watch
it's really
it
good. It's just a drag.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
All right. So, other movies came out in 1986. So, Lan, we'll start with you while I look for the schedule for the next pair of episodes.
Oh, man. Like, scrolling down the list of releases in 1986 was just me going, like, oh, these are all of my favorite movies when I was a kid. So many of them. But the one I decided I wanted to recommend is a movie that I probably didn't see until high school, which was Project Aiko. I feel like it's my job to recommend the anime movie, being a big fan. It's kind of like a parody of anime. It's not very serious, so it's a lot of fun, a lot of action, really goofy. Can't recommend it enough.
That's cool. What is that about? I'm not familiar with it at all.
It's about a super-powered high school girl and her best friend who is an airhead, and their rival who is like a crazy girl with a lot of money and robots, and there are space aliens coming to Earth at the same time, causing problems and coming after them, and it's wackiness.
Oh,
it's
wow.
A lot of wackiness.
It's very similar to Platoon. Yeah.
Very similar to Platoon.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, I don't know if Spencer's ready. I guess I'll go. I'm gonna pick.
I had to find a schedule for the next episodes, and I did find it.
You did find it? Yes. So you want to go now?
No, you can go.
Okay. I'm going to recommend two. One that was very formative to my sense of humor when I was younger, and one that has been the things I like as an adult. It's not rated R or X, don't worry. When I was younger, my family watched Better Off Dead just like everybody else, not just because it was on Comedy Central, we had on VHS, but we also watched One Crazy Summer a lot.
I love that movie.
Yeah, same director, Savage Steve Holland, also starring John Cusack. Some people say it's a sequel. They're supposed to be different characters, but it's got the exact same kind of wacky tone, like a bit based in reality, like a teen movie in the way of a, you know, Breakfast Club, once again, but with some completely out there wacky things that don't actually happen, cartoony stuff. And I rewatched it recently, and it is still so much fun. Like, It has the problems that any 80s movie of that era seems to have, which is, you know, we just kind of have racism. We have a little bit of homophobia. I don't remember specifically being any strong thing about the movie for either one of those, but it is there because I'm super sensitive about that stuff.
Is it bad, or is kind of like...
No, it's just like, no. You know, the occasional dropping the... Or I think somebody calls somebody gay, you know, and like... There's a scene where Bobcat Goldthwait gets stuck in a Godzilla costume and then proceeds to destroy a model of a city. And there's a Japanese guy is like, "Ha ha, wonderful party!" You know, it's not really racist, but like you could see it that way, or maybe it is. I don't know.
Okay, so it's not like a Revenge of the Nerds situation.
Right. No character like that, and there's no character like the other character.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Curtis Armstrong is also in this movie, though.
Oh, interesting.
I haven't seen it in a long time either, but it was one of my favorites, and as a teenager, I loved that movie.
Yeah, it's still really funny. Like, this is where
really
I knew
loved,
Joel...
John Cusack. Really was into John Cusack at the time.
Yeah, and he's great. Demi Moore is great. Joel Murray, like one of the lesser seen Murray brothers, is in it, and he's really good in it.
Yeah, he was on Mad Men.
Yep, he sure was.
And he's in a bunch of Bobcat movies. Wait, is he?
Oh, he is. Well, that makes sense.
I think they're like, never mind. I'm thinking of someone else.
Yep.
I think I might, never mind. You continue.
Anyways, it's really good. And that, like I said, that is part of the bedrock of my sense of humor now. The movie that I have attached to as an adult is She's Gotta Have... No, wait, I didn't... we're gonna talk... We already talked about that, presumably, at this point. Yeah. Is Under the Cherry Moon. Now... You're saying, Joel, I've heard you talk about this movie before, if perhaps you've listened to anything else I've been on. I talked about this for an in-between episode between seasons of the minute-by-minute Batman 89 that was going on. They watched the Prince movies in between, so me and Sarah got assigned Prince under the Princes Under the Cherry Moon. I'm going to tell you, listener, you should watch this movie. Now turn off the podcast. Okay, have you already seen the movie? This movie sucks. This movie is terrible. This movie made my brain hurt. And not just like when I watched it. Like, I'm still recovering, and I watched this last year. Like it's got Prince music. That's great. But some of the things that happen, like the acting choices that Prince makes in it, of course, he directed this one, too, is so baffling that it has to be seen. Like, you have to make other people see this black and white monstrosity that is not so bad it's good. It's more like so bad it will leave you changed. I am a hollow husk of a man. Anyways, Under the Cherry Moon.
I need to see this now.
Yes,
you do. I've always wondered about it, but now I definitely need to see it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still waiting for Spencer to watch it.
I love Prince, so at some point I will.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love Prince? He's the best. But, okay, so mine are a couple. One is, I guess, technically a short film, The Pied Piper, by, I just forgot to look up his name. It's a Czech stop-motion animated film, and it's very disturbing and upsetting, and it's like 45 minutes to an hour, something like that. But it's, I have to get the guy's name. Yuri Barta.
I'm looking at it on Wikipedia right now, but yeah, I was going to say I don't know how to pronounce that.
I think it's Yuri Barta, and I'm just a fan of him in general, and I think that was a stop motion. And And he has a certain brand of stop motion where he likes to use like stuff from nature and this kind of unconventional things, and it's kind of a little eerie and odd, and it's like portrays the Pied Piper story in like a bit more like gruesome, grotesque type of way. And it feels like something that like Tim Burton would have seen and been influenced by for his aesthetic, but it goes like a bit darker than Tim Burton would ever go. But if you want to like into Yuri Barta and his stuff, like start with the Pied Piper, and then kind of if you're into it, then track down his other stuff, like Ballad About Greenwood is another really good one. And he made one feature film like 10 years ago or so with like Maggie Gyllenhaal where he used like antique toys. But again, like he likes to use things that are kind of creepy and off-putting, and antique toys creep me the fuck out, so I'll probably never see it. But yeah, Pied Piper, it's out there if you look around for it. And The Messenger, it's a Fred Williamson a Death Wish knockoff. It's kind of his phase where he's doing shitty like Italian productions, and I love that era of his work because it's like if you're into that type of low grade Italian action movie, then by all means watch it. And if not, you'll find it just very painfully boring and like shitty. But I love action movies just in general, and even like the real shitty ones like this. And Death Shadows, which I wrote about for my blog, Jailhouse 701, Japanese Cult Cinema. It's a Hideo Gosha movie. It's kind of one of the only like goofy one he did late in his career. It's not talked about that much, but there's still some cool, interesting stuff in it. And it should be on Criterion Channel. And yeah, that's it.
Cool. That sounds good. That sounds good to me. I love action movies. The badder, the better.
Yeah, you'll like The Messenger.
Have you watched Stone Cold?
No.
I don't know that I have.
You should watch Stone Cold.
It doesn't, like, it rings a bell. Maybe I have, and it was just so long ago that I don't remember.
Yeah, starring Brian Bosworth. I highly recommend it. It didn't come out in 86, though, so... Listener, ignore that. This is just for Lan.
Only I'm allowed to watch it.
Mm-hmm. And, Joel, I noticed you watch a Cynthia Rothrock movie.
I didn't get all the way through it, but I was really digging it, called Sworn to Justice.
Yeah, and Cynthia's great. Like,
I recommend going into it blind, because it is insane what ends up going on. Like, the plot, it just straight up is crazy, crazy town. And it's got plenty of kicking and plenty of puns and, yeah.
Yeah, I'm repeating Zebras in America, but Cynthia Rothrock should have been in the Expendables. It's fucked up that, like, they got, like, fucking Jason Statham over her. Like, Cynthia Rothrock is a legit action star. She's fucking great.
That would be great to have her in those. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, but I don't think Stallone would allow that.
Probably not.
Because she's an actual like a martial artist, and I feel like he would feel threatened that she actually could legitimately beat him up. At least that's my theory about it. But yeah. So next episode will be. We're about to finish up. It will. What the fucking movie called? We're gonna flip the order. So instead of doing the Spike Lee movie first, we're gonna do the companion piece first. It will be Sex, Lies, and Videotape, followed up by Do the Right Thing, and in between there, maybe will be the wrap up episode where we talk about everything we covered over the past 2 years. I think. The quarantine has fucked up my sense of time, so I don't know how long we've been doing this for exactly.
It's been 7 years.
In Tibet?
Yes.
7 years, 7 days, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And around the time
this comes out... Time's a flat circle and shit.
And around the time this comes out, we'll have a bonus episode on, hopefully, Passover, the other Spike Lee movie from 2018. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, I think, like a film play or something. That's on my list to, like, we kind of need to cover that. So, yeah, Lan, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was a good time.
Yeah, do you have anything to promote? Any, like, podcast appearances or anything like that?
Oh, this is the first one I've been on in quite a while, actually. But, you can hear me online on the radio at whynotradio.net every Friday. I'm usually either in the mornings or the afternoons. You can find my name on the schedule, but it's usually Fridays. If you like indie rock, we play it 24/7 with very little commercials. So check it out. Whynotradio.net.
Cool. All right. J-Dog, this will be September. So will the other project... Yeah,
by the time this comes out, we'll have our episode... We'll actually have our episode of the Dead Travel Fast, the vampire podcast that Spencer and I did with Sarah. And you should be able to download that in the normal places.
All right.
I would paint any more details. Also, my other podcast, customers also watched a Prime Watch Along podcast, should be out by then.
All right. And by that point, I think I'll be in my second semester since coming back to college. So, who knows if I'll be back to blogging. For Jailhouse 701 again, but you can go through the archives and read stuff. Warning, the first 5 to 10 are I'm not proud of. I should go back and edit, but I probably won't.
Exclusively about pornography.
No, I get the pinky violence stuff here and there.
As I said.
Read my thing on Reiko Ika if you want to read about like that stuff and her crazy career. Anyway, so see you guys next time for the penultimate or penultimate episode on Sex Lies and Videotape.
Okay, and all right, stopping recording.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.